Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Jersey Coastal Live. I'm Andrea Tarr. And today we're going to talk about our skin and our faces and our cosmetic appearance. Do you like what you see when you look in the mirror? Or are you one of the many, many millions of Americans who don't like what they see and they are looking for some kind of cosmetic rejuvenation procedure? You know, I know as we all age, we want to look younger, and I guess part of how we look is related to genetics, and part of how we look is definitely related to what we've done with ourselves over the years, specifically what we've done or not done to our skin. So today we're going to speak with Dr. Dean Tomasello, who specializes in medical aesthetics, and he's going to explain to us all about the different kinds of procedures that we can do to maybe perk up our youthful appearance. But we're not talking about full-blown surgery here. We're talking about more things like non-invasive procedures. So I think that from what I've been reading, that seems to be the trend, that people are looking towards non-invasive procedures because, first of all, they take less time, they cost less money, and they still give you some great results. So Dr. Tomasello, thank you for being with me today.
Hi, Andrea. It's great to be here. Thanks so much.
Oh, really? It's my pleasure. You know, one of the things that I love having the opportunity to share information about things that interest me, and I know that this is something that interests a lot of people, the whole idea of medical aesthetics, but you don't always have an opportunity to really go one-on-one with the doctor. So this is, a great opportunity. So, again, I'm really pleased to have you with me today. Actually, the very first thing is, would you just kind of explain a little bit, when we say medical aesthetics, this is something that some people might not really understand. So explain exactly what we mean by that.
Well, medical aesthetics has been around, I would say, for probably 12 to 15 years. I think it all kind of started when Botox was approved back in 2002, and then you saw a big increase in the amount of these procedures being done. I think prior to that, it was more called surgical aesthetics, and it was more done by surgeons.
Mm-hmm.
It was a surgical operation. I think the term medical aesthetics kind of came around when you had Botox come out in 2002, and then these hyaluronic acid fillers like Restylane and Juvederm followed in a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
You started to see more and more of these procedures being done, and then, you know, the estheticians that we're all aware of that do chemical peels and microdermabrasions, the doctors that were doing aesthetics, are just the term medical aesthetics just started to become more widely known.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really took it off. It's fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of, you know, the family doctor or something like that, that's been around for you know, forever. But medical aesthetics, I would say, really probably, I think of it sort of like when Botox was approved, sort of like 2002 was probably when it really started taking
mm-hmm.
off. And it is just in the past 10 to 12 years just grown incredibly with the different neurotoxins available and dermal fillers and laser treatments. It's really become a huge industry.
Now, I had seen on the website for the American Society of Plastic Surgeons that they feel that in the year 2015, which of course is not over yet, that only about 12% of cosmetic procedures will be surgical, and that means about 88% will be non-surgical, all of these cosmetic kinds of things. I mean, what's your thought about that?
Yeah, well, it's not surprising. That 88%, yeah, I believe it. You know, a lot of the cosmetic surgeons that
mm-hmm.
used to just operate they're all doing Botox and fillers, and a lot of them are doing lasers now. It's more cost effective. There's very little downtime. Sometimes there's literally like no downtime. I mean, if you go in and have Botox, you really
mm-hmm.
don't. You have to stay upright for 4 hours, and you kind of just go about your business. And even with fillers, there's no downtime. There's none of this, like, having to plan a surgical procedure and having a week off of work or what have you. It's much more cost effective too. We're not talking $10,000. We're talking you can get things done for, you know, a fraction of that. And you know, people are jumping on board. You know, when someone can go in and get Botox and fillers and some laser treatments, get rid of some brown spots or some redness, and you know, they can leave and see real tangible results in a week or less with no downtime. I believe it. I do. I'm not surprised at those figures. It's just such a growing industry. That number probably 10 years ago would be, it certainly wouldn't be 88%, but I'm not surprised by that.
It's probably going to increase every year. I guess I see for myself, one of the big things, one of the big draws is the fact of minimal downtime, because I do know over the years people that have had, you know, standard facelifts, the surgical kind, and there was a lot of downtime, a lot of healing, and, you know, that really sort of cuts into your life. But with all of these procedures, I love the fact that you basically can... you know, if you have to take a day off or a weekend, and then you're pretty much good to go, aren't you?
Yeah, you really are. I mean, you have to think like 10 years ago, before wrestling, you were dealing with collagen implants, and that was when Botox was just getting started, but you didn't have, and lasers were really, you know, they were really just, they were around, but they were not at the level they are today. So you really... in 10 years' time, you've seen just such a huge shift. And I've looked at some different articles and journals about the growth of medical aesthetics, and it just keeps growing every year. And the technology is improving, and the fillers are improving. It's amazing.
I think one of the reasons, of course, it grows is that we tend to be very obsessed with looking younger and younger and younger, even as we're getting older. So I'm sure that won't change anytime soon. But let me ask you, what do you see in the differences between what men want and women want? Because obviously men are very much on board with this as well.
Yeah, the male population is growing as well. I mean, as far as men are concerned, twice as many men are coming in. It's over 200% increase in the past 5 years. What they come in for is a little different. I'd say men and women both come in for Botox. Men, probably not so much fillers. They'll come in for laser hair removal. The men I've treated, it's mostly those things. They'll do laser hair, Botox, and some of them will do fillers. And some of them will do everything. They'll do a lot of different laser treatments. Women do Botox and fillers. They seem to do more peels, intensive pulse light treatments, get rid of brown spots. They're kind of more geared towards cosmetic lasers, maybe a little more so than men. But definitely men are increasing quite a bit. It's a population that 10 years ago was almost non-existent. That was like what women went to have done. Like it was like going to have your nails done. But now it's like men have sort of decided that, you know, maybe it's okay, you know.
Yeah, and I think we've made it okay. You know, I honestly don't know when we sort of decided that we wanted men to be totally hairless.
Right.
And, you know, I always think of James Bond, you know, Sean Connery. He had hair on his chest.
Right.
And he was my idea of a
man.
But now, you know, really. I'm just making an observation. That's all, people.
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting, you know.
But
you
know,
clearly women don't want hair on their chest. But
No. Women don't. Women, laser hair removal is a little more... a spot here, a spot there. I'll have a man come in who says his wife is tired of his hairy back, and we do his whole back or something like that. Sometimes it's the wife that's pushing for it more than the man is. But yeah, there are differences. Yeah.
What's the age group of mostly that you frequency of the men and the women that come in for different procedures?
It's pretty broad. I've had patients who've come in for acne, you know, treatments, intense pulse light treatments, who are younger, you know. But mm-hmm. typically, I would say the average is probably 30 to 50 or 60, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there's a there definitely seems to be sort of like an average, probably 40s and 50s, what's coming in my office. But
okay.
I tell you, there's variables there. I've had people in their 70s, and I've had younger people. There's certain procedures you can't do with people who are under 18, but like a lot of kids have acne, so there's different things we've done with peels and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty broad range age wise. But if you want to say like
so
the middle is probably in the 40s.
Yeah.
40, you know, you think of women in their 40s probably is a very common age group, but it definitely there's a lot of women in their 30s and men in their 30s and 50s that are coming in. So.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the various things that we can do to ourselves. And I'm thinking that Botox is probably still absolutely number one.
Yeah, Botox is definitely number one. Last year there was like in the neighborhood of 3.5 million, people treated. And of that market, I mean, neurotoxins include Botox and Dysport and Xeomin, which is the newer one. But Botox is
mm-hmm.
still like 85% of that. So by a pretty wide margin, Botox is still the most common non-surgical aesthetic procedure, medical aesthetic procedure that we're seeing. And it's well known.
Dr.
It's been Thomas around, Hello. You know.
What for people who might not really understand exactly what Botox does for them, can you just really explain how it's used, where is it, you know, where do you get injected, and how long it lasts? What can you expect from Botox? Why would you get Botox?
Well, to start, Botox is a neurotoxin, which basically means it affects the nerve that innervates. Nerves innervate muscles, so Botox binds to the nerve, and it prevents the nerve from innervating the muscle. That's why you have you get wrinkles in your forehead if you frown or if you raise your eyebrows. Those are the wrinkles, and repeatedly doing
okay.
that gives you wrinkles. Botox, it has a reversible bind with the nerve, meaning that's going to last about 3 to 4 months on average, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more.
Oh.
But what it does is, you inject it into areas where you want less muscle movement. And the most common areas being the brow, which is sort of like between your eyebrows, forehead, and then the crow's feet, like on the sides. But there's a lot of other places you can inject. You can inject in the chin area to like raise the corners of the mouth. There's different ways to inject in the forehead to raise or lower the eyebrows, things like that. But by and large, it's the brow, the forehead, and the crow's feet where people get injected. And the injection itself it's kind of like it feels like a little pinch. It's not very, very, we
mm-hmm.
use very small. We use the smallest needle you can buy, basically. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the procedure itself takes maybe 5 or 10 minutes all in once you get cleaned up and everything. And, yeah, I would say 3 to 4 months is the average. Botox usually has its full effect after about 3 to 5 days. So when you walk out of the office, you're not going to notice immediately things aren't moving. It does
yeah.
take a little while for the proteins in the Botox to sort of adhere and sort of get settled in a certain area. The other neurotoxins like Dysport and Xeomin are very similar. I mean, there's little differences in, like with Dysport has a little different type of protein attached to the neurotoxin, and Xeomin has technically no protein. And these are the little nuanced differences that are between the three that are available right now. They all essentially work the same. this part seems to work a little quicker. It may take effect in, on average, 1 to 3 days instead of 3 to 5 days. Zeomin, I really haven't used. It's newer. I haven't really seen any huge advantage with it. But you know, they basically all do the same thing and effectively just blocking the nerve and making the muscles stop moving. When the muscles stop moving, things smoothen out.
And so Botox has been around for a very long time, so it's fair to say that it's tried and true, and you know it's going to do the job for you.
Yeah, Botox is you know, the nice thing about Botox, it's very for people who've been doing it for a while, it's very it's very predictable results in my experience.
Predictable.
And
okay.
You know, and it's like I tell people that I've worked, you know, I've trained in things with Botox, you know, there's certain places you put it where it works really well, and there's a lot of places you can put it, but it's really important to avoid certain, it's not so much where you put it, it's a lot of times where not to put it, where you hear about people who have a droopy lid or things like that. But anyone who's done it for a while, it's very predictable, and the results are you know, it's you get the expected results. It's very well known, and I've had great results with it.
All right. Well, the next thing I want to talk about after Botox, I want to talk about fillers. And I know, again, these are very popular. And, again, a lot of people don't understand exactly what they are, how do they work. And I know that they're also used for facial contouring. So maybe that's something that you could talk about now, fillers.
Yeah, there's you know, like I mentioned, Restylane was approved like 10 years ago in 2005, and since then you've had a lot of these hyaluronic acid fillers, and they're not all hyaluronic acid. Like, for instance, Radiesse is considered calcium hydroxyapatite, which is actually sort of like a component of bone cartilage. It's a heavier hyaluronic acids are clear when you look at them, where Radiesse is, it looks like a milky white color. But these are the ones that are well known, like Restylane and Juvederm and Radiesse. There's a newer one out that's called Bellotero. These are all hyaluronic acids, with the exception of Radiesse, which is it's calcium hydroxyapatite. But basically, in terms of the hyaluronic acid fillers, what we're doing is we're injecting into the dermis, which is basically right under your skin is the epidermis, and below that a dermis, and below that. And you're injecting, and you're filling in an area that there's a deficit, the most common area being nasolabial folds, which is like by the side of your nose, and the area sort of below the corner of your mouth towards your chin, which is called the marionette line. People also get injections in their brow. We also do in the cheeks to sort of augment the cheeks and in some ways lift a little bit, which helps smoothen out the face. They all work really well. There's different uses for each one, though. And I think it's important for people to know when they go in what their goals are exactly. If you want to have your nasolabial folds smoothened out, there's some products that work better for that than, say, if you want to have, we do fillers like underneath the eyes, which is called a tear trough. There's some fillers have a smaller molecular size, some have a larger one, like Restylane, for instance, has a smaller size, so it's better for finer lines and finer areas, whereas if you had something like Perlane or Radiesse or Juvederm Ultra, they're more bulking. They fill in bigger areas better. So
clearly this is something you have to go to a doctor who's experienced so that he or she is going to know exactly which is the right product to use.
Exactly. Like, and a lot of women, you know, having their lips done, there's certain products you just don't, like, you never put Radiesse in the lips. You put Restylane or Juvederm. And, you know, these are things that it makes a big difference. And it's not just knowing the right filler to put where. It's, like, the right amount. And you know, the person you're going to see for the injection should really be able to tell you, okay, what are your goals here? And they should be able to explain to you, well, I want to use this filler because, not because necessarily it's on sale or something. They should be using a filler that's best suited for a certain area. And there's really, like, it's not set in stone. Like, you can use, a lot of them can be used interchangeably. Restylane and Juvederm both can be used in the lips. Radiesse and Juvederm Voluma, which is a newer one, it can be both used in the cheeks. There's options, but there's certain things that should be used in certain areas, so to speak. The person doing an injection should know that.
Just to be really clear, you're not actually filling in like a wrinkle in a very depressed area of the skin.
Yeah, you're actually filling it in, and you're kind of almost pushing this. You're pushing it up from behind, from underneath. You're kind of like, what you're doing is basically increasing the supporting architecture under the skin. And the good thing about hyaluronic fillers is that they draw water to themselves. So they tend to, that's one of the reasons they last, is hyaluronic acid draws water to itself. So, for instance, I tell someone after they get fillers, if you hydrate yourself well, you drink enough fluids, it's going to last longer. But you're actually filling in an area and kind of pushing the whole area up, if that makes sense.
Okay, that makes absolute sense. Now, I totally understand that. So the fact that the fillers last only a certain amount of time, so what is happening to the filler? Does it somehow dissipate in your body?
Yeah, the body kind of breaks it down, and that's always a hotly discussed topic as to which one lasts longer and this one versus that one, which one lasts longer. I found that some last 6 to 9 months, some last a little longer. I think they all last 6 months. I try to go for the ones that I think last a little longer and have some data supporting it. It depends on where you're injecting it in the face, too, because the lips move a lot more than your nasolabial folds necessarily. So lips don't tend to last quite as long because you move your mouth a lot more than you move that, like your cheek, for instance. If you have your cheeks done, they tend to last longer because the products you use last longer. Plus, you're not moving your cheek as much as you'd be moving your lips, for instance. So it has some bearing on the area.
All right. Well, that's
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I like to get 9 to 12 months if I can. That's usually a goal. And sometimes I should add that a lot of times it helps when people come in before the filler is all the way gone. A lot of times if someone comes in between 6 to 9 months, we can sort of fill in an area that isn't quite fully, you can tell there's still some filler there, and that tends to kind of perpetuate it a little bit longer. Meaning you could have a filler at day one and then at 9 months, and then you might get a much longer duration after the second one than you would if you had it once and then waited for 18 months to two years and had another one. They kind of have an additive effect sometimes. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Very good. The next thing I want to ask you about is chemical peels and microdermabrasion. I know they're different, of course, and how is one more effective than the other? You tell us, how do they vary?
Microdermabrasion and chemical peels are, in the simplest sense, both trying to exfoliate, get rid of dead skin cells while stimulating the growth of new cells, which is great for your complexion in both regards. Microdermabrasion is basically you use a machine that uses like a spray of called microcrystals, and they kind of rub it over your face. And what it's doing is it's kind of taking the dead skin cells off the top of, and in doing so, the skin feels much smoother, and also in doing so, you get it stimulates the healthier cells underneath, the ones that haven't died yet, to sort of flourish and grow. And Microderm is very safe.
Mm-hmm.
You can really use it on just about any skin type. And there's like 6 different skin types. It's a scale that goes from 1 to 6. And 6 would be a very, like a black person. And 1 would be, you know, someone who's Irish, let's say, and very, you know, fair skinned, burns easily. You can really use them. You can use a Microderm with a lot of, and Microderm is, in my opinion, is pretty straightforward procedure. A lot of times they're combined together. Someone will have a Microderm abrasion and then a peel. The Microderm abrasion is more like a physical way of removing dead skin cells. Chemical peel involves a chemical, which the chemical does the work. And there's different types. You may have heard of like glycolic acid and different types of alpha and beta hydroxy acids. Those are used. And what they do is they're just basically put onto the face and for a period of time. There's different strengths. They kind of go as a superficial, medium, and deep, depending on how deep the chemical actually goes into the skin. And they're doing the same thing. They're exfoliating. The ones that go deeper actually do more as far as affecting collagen, stimulating collagen and fibroblasts to like sort of help firmen the skin. The ones that I've done in my office, I've only really done superficial and medium. The deep peels are just they're very harsh. They're, in some regards, can be dangerous as far as, you know, having complications. So I haven't really done many deep peels. When it comes to peels, though, that scale I was talking to you about, you really have to be careful. We really don't do any of the 5s and 6s, the very dark skin people, because there's too many complications with effects on pigment and things like that. So it's usually, I'm really conservative that way. I like to probably stick to 1, 2, 3s, and 4s as far as that scale goes. So you have to be much more cautious with chemical peels. And even a very light peel is, you know, there's some downtime with that. Your skin will, once you've had the peel, you will for days have skin falling off as your body is stimulating these new cells to sort of push the old ones off as part of that whole process.
Right.
Yeah. So those are very common procedures as well. Yeah.
Well, believe
it
or not, we only have about 2 minutes left, and there's so many more things I want to talk about, but let's mention your website, which is clearskinmd.net, and maybe you could just talk briefly about the kind of information on your website.
Yeah, thank you. Clearskinmd.net is something I started, was basically to help people understand about skincare and about medical aesthetics. And I try to, you know, all of the blog entries I have there are aimed at helping people understand, you know, how to take care of their skin, different products that are available, how to treat acne and melasma and rosacea, breaking things down as far as which dermal fillers do what, just kind of making it a very clear, concise, user-friendly way to learn about skincare without having to go through a million ads or someone trying to sell you something. And like, it's difficult because people do a search for acne or something, and you're going to get, you know, it's crazy. So I try to make it, you know, helpful to people, really.
All right. Well, to my listeners out there, I just want to tell you that once I put my blog up after the show, I will put the link to Dr. Tomasello's website, clearskinmd.net, and you'll be able to access it anytime you want. I do want to say we're almost out of time, but would it be fair to say the number one thing to do to take good care of your skin is to minimize your time in the sun? I'm sure you would agree with that.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, and if you're smoking, don't smoke. That's I know that's
right,
another big thing to take good care of your skin.
Yeah.
All right, so we are just about out of time, and Dr. Dean Tomasello, I want to say thank you for being with me. Okay, folks, can 30 minutes change your life? Maybe. So keep listening to Jersey Coastal Live. Till next time, I'm Andrea Tarr. Thank you, Dr. Tomasello, for being with me. Bye.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.